Chapter 31. The next morning came much faster than any of us wanted it to. We'd only gotten about 4 hours of sleep by the time the medical crew moved the body off the street. The victim the basilisk had pinned down had died looking even more terrified than the others. Veda had gone and made mirrored glasses for us to wear, hoping that they would be able to combat the basilisk's gaze in the event it ended up trying to off us with its glare. There were so many unpredictable elements that none of us felt remotely confident about going after it. The girls and I were ready and waiting when Irving showed up, looking even more tired than we all felt. We waited for him to change into the suit Veda had made for him, and then boarded the boat. Irving sat on one of the benches with a thump.
"These tanks are heavier than I expected," he explained.
"Take that into account when we are moving around on the ship," I told him. "You'll get used to the weight quickly, but just pay attention. Hey, is that a gun on your belt?"
"It sure is," he replied. "Why?"
"Does it work when wet?" I asked.
"Not well, at least I don't think so," he replied. "I don't plan on going swimming, though. You can never be too prepared."
Veda started the boat engine and pulled us away from the dock. "Speaking of being prepared, I made sure we had zip ties and tape in case we need them." Sophie snorted.
"I'm not going out there to tie that thing up."
"I know," Veda gave a half smile and nodded. "It just makes me feel better to think that maybe it won't have to go that way."
"Think whatever you want," Sophie grunted under her breath. "Let's get this over with."
Irving started looking around, confused.
"Hey, how come this thing isn't making any noise?"
"The boat?" I asked. "Veda designed a new waveless motor."
"Really? I've been in boats with so-called waveless motors. None of them are this quiet."
Irving was truly shocked.
"Yes, really. Did you really expect anything less from her?" I joked, trying to lighten the mood just a little.
"Of course not," Irving replied. "Hence the contract for the suits."
Veda chuckled and went back to steering the boat, while I explained to Irving how we would get up the side of it. I also reminded him about the deck full of passengers.
"Yeah, I would prefer not to repeat that night if we can help it," Irving said, shaking his head as he remembered all the bodies we'd pulled from the water.
"Here we are," Freya announced, as Veda pulled us alongside the ship. I looked up the side and sighed to myself. I wasn't looking forward to that climb yet again. I shook off my mood and grabbed the bag with the handles in it. We got up the side of the ship relatively quickly, considering we had to make sure Irving did his part correctly. When we reached the deck rail, Sophie, leading the other ladder again, and I peeked over slowly. The view was much different from the last time. While there were still passengers scattered along the deck, it appeared the majority of them were dead. The odd one or two who still moved was too weak to even drag themselves along. It really did look like a sea of zombie bodies. We waved to the others that we were going to board. Once on deck, we helped the others up and over the rail. We gave Irving a moment to take in the scene, realizing he was seeing it for the first time. Surprisingly, he was calm and acted as though nothing was abnormal. He was definitely in job mode. Then we made our way through the dead, shriveled bodies to the captain's booth. The door was open, and it was clear that was how the passengers had gotten on deck. I led the way to the narrow stairway we'd gone down the first time we were on the ship, and soon we found ourselves in the hallway just down from the dining hall doors. Not wanting a repeat of last time, I made sure we moved very slowly and put my finger up to my regulator to signal the others to be quiet. When we reached the dining hall, however, we ended up not having to worry about a repeat performance. It was empty except for two passengers at a table over to the left, slumped and motionless. I neared them slowly, checking for signs of life. When I tried to scoot one of their chairs over a little, their hand flopped down beside them. It was shriveled and lifeless. I looked up at the others and shook my head, saddened at yet even more death. Delaney snapped her fingers to get our attention and then pointed across the room.
she'd spotted a tiny door on the other side. We headed for it, and when we reached it, I realized it was a normal door. It just looked miniature compared to the grandiose doors on the other side of the room. I tested the doorknob, which turned easily and silently as though it had been oiled. The hall on the other side was wide but short, and 20 feet later, we found ourselves in a large foyer. I took a moment to look around. Even as dark as the interior of the ship was, and us only having flashlights to see with, I could tell that at one time, it was very beautiful. There was a gigantic, winding staircase off to the right with cobwebs curling around the marble railing. A crystal chandelier, overly elaborate as was the style of the day, hung from the ceiling, tinkling its crystals together every so often as the ship moved on the water. There were two hallways across from it, each seemingly leading in opposite directions from the other. I turned to the girls and pulled my regulator out of my mouth. "Which one do you want to take first?" Freya didn't even hesitate. She pointed to the one on the left. I put my regulator back in just as Irving took his out.
"I'm going to check the other one. A lot of ships have a maze of passageways, and maybe if we come at this thing from two directions, he won't be able to disappear." He popped his regulator back in and headed off.
I looked at the girls, wondering if I should protest him going off on his own. Before I had a chance to, Veda cleared her mouth.
"Irving, you shouldn't go alone."
He stopped and turned.
"I'll be fine. I'm used to working alone. Meet back here if you don't find anything."
Then he disappeared down the hall. Veda shrugged and put her breathing apparatus back in her mouth. The girls followed me towards the other hallway. The flooring changed from warped hardwood to hard carpet when we entered. For the first 10 feet, it appeared to be a normal hall, but then it got rapidly more narrow. Soon, there was barely room for two people to walk next to each other, so we decided to move along in a single file line. Another 30 feet, and a door appeared directly in front of me. It was partly open, so I tapped it with my foot. It swung easily, revealing another narrow staircase, at which I rolled my eyes. I didn't like the idea of getting so deep into the ship. I liked knowing the way out wasn't 80 feet above my head. But I didn't have a choice, so we started down. The staircase was much longer than the first one, and the stairs squealed and squeaked with every step. Some of them bowed under my weight, and I slowed to make sure I wouldn't bust right through them. It made our progress slow to a crawl. At one point, after going down what seemed like 30 stairs, I turned my head back to see that the girls were doing all right. I gave them an okay sign with my thumb and forefinger, and they gave me the same sign back. As I turned my head around as I took one more step, I slammed directly into a wall.
"Oh my God, are you all right?"
Delaney asked, holding her regulator. Removing mine, I replied,
"Yeah, I just jammed my glasses into the bridge of my nose. That stings a little."
I pointed my flashlight to my right and then to my left. Both directions showed a hallway. I made the executive decision to go to the right. Half of me had the thought that if Irving found himself in the same spot, that is to say, if our passages mirrored each other, he'd be closer if he needed help. Also, if he needed help, we may hear him better. I was regretting letting him wander off alone, though I wasn't sure why. I guess the guy had just grown on me. We only moved 10 feet down the new hall, the carpet below our feet crackling like we were stepping on stale bread, before encountering a door. There was a dusty gold placard on it that read A1. "I think we are in a cabin hall," I told the girls, nodding to the door. Delaney slid up beside me.
"This may take a while."
"What do you mean?" I asked her. She shone her light down the hall in front of me. The light bounced off doorknobs every 10 feet or so.
"We'll have to check them all."
"Okay, here's what we're going to do. Delaney, you, me, and Sophie will cover the first 3 rooms. Freya and Veda can move on to the next 2 and so forth. Just be sure to move slowly and stay together," I instructed.
With our regulators in place once again, I twisted the doorknob to room A1 and pushed the door open. Once Delaney, Sophie, and I were inside, Freya and Veda passed through the hall and went to their designated rooms. The rooms were tiny. They reminded me of train cars with the way everything was so packed together. Every inch of the room was used efficiently, but there wasn't any extra. I opened the closet, and it surprised me to see clothes hanging in it. After all that had happened with the passengers, I hadn't really thought of them as having lived on the ship. I closed the closet and moved to the bed. It was neatly made with an even layer of dust on top of the floral print bedspread. The corners were tucked so tight, I was sure the last person who made it must have been a ship's employee. That made me wonder where the passengers had been sleeping all those years, if not in their beds. All in all, it didn't take more than a couple of minutes to search every nook and cranny of the room once we had determined no poisonous-breathed beast was waiting for us. We moved on to the next room, and the next, each one in the same condition. By the time we were done searching our first set of rooms, Freya and Veda waited in the hallway. We took the next block of 5 rooms and started over. At that point, the rooms changed slightly. They were bigger, which was evidenced by double beds instead of singles, and full bathroom counters instead of podium sinks. They still were small, but much less so than the first ones. Another 5 rooms down, and none of us had found anything. There were 4 doors left on the sides of the hall and 1 at the very end. We decided on 2 rooms for each group, and we'd meet for the last room. Again, the rooms became larger now that we were nearing the end of the hall. They were starting to look more like hotel suites. The draperies were fancier, with lace and pinstripes, and the carpeting was thicker, which made dust puff up with every step we took. There were dust ruffles on the bed sheets, so we carefully lifted them to check underneath. We found nothing but some tucked away empty suitcases. Back in the hallway once again, Freya put her hands up, holding her regulator in one.
Nothing. You?
Nope, Sophie replied. Bunch of dust and floral prints.
Only one left, Freya added. Then we'll have to head back. There aren't any other passages down here.
Let's get to it, I said. Then we can go find Irving. It's going to take him a lot longer having to search each room by himself if he has cabins over there, too.
We put our regulators back in, and I squeezed past Freya and Veda to lead the way. The door at the end of the hall was larger than the others and had a bronze lever handle instead of a standard doorknob. The plaque on the door was so covered in dust, I couldn't read it, so I wiped it away with the back of my glove. It read, Captain. I pointed it out to the girls and then pushed the door slowly. Once it was wide open, I stepped inside, and the girls followed. It was like we'd been transported to a different place. We were standing in a small living room area with couches and chairs. I looked across the room to a small desk and put my arms out to stop the girls from moving any further. All of our flashlights had been bouncing off the walls, so I hadn't seen it at first. There was a small candle burning on the desk.